Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 187 of Getting It Out Podcast. My daughter Mazzy is sitting here with me again. Mazzy, what did you think about that song?
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it? No. Do you know where it came from?
No.
Indonesia. Some people emailed me that song from Indonesia. The song was called Imprison. The band is Humanoid. They're a metallic hardcore band. Do you like metallic hardcore?
Nope. Never. Never in my life.
Never in your life? Do you think there's a chance that maybe someday you'll like metallic hard? Wow, you're pretty serious about that. What would you prefer to hear?
I don't know.
Just anything else? Not that?
Anything else. Just not rock.
Not rock. One of these days I'm going to get you to like bands with guitars.
No,
I'm not going to force it on you.
You're not. You're already doing it.
No, I'm not. I'm just getting your opinion. All right, well, do you know what's cool about that song, even if you don't like the way it sounds?
What?
Is that these guys emailed it to me and asked me to play it, okay? And I love when that happens, because that means people from all over the world send me songs because they want to hear it on the podcast. They're asking to be played on the podcast. And I think that is a very cool thing, and it's a really neat way to be able to help people out that you don't know. Because people work really hard on their songs and their music. And sometimes they don't get the chance to play them for other people. So I can play them for other people. So that's at least pretty cool, right?
Yeah, kind of. Maybe, sort of.
Yes, that's cool. Because it's just helping people out, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so do you know what I'm going to do in this episode?
No, I never do.
Well, I have an interview with a guy I've talked to before. His name is Peter Kowalski. He's in the band Ether Coven. Do you know where he lives?
No.
I don't either. But I think it's Florida. Do you know what's in Florida?
No. Kangaroos?
Kangaroos? There might be. There's alligators. A lot of wild stuff there. Alligators for sure.
Tarantulas?
Probably tarantulas. It's basically like the Australia of America. You don't like that. But Disneyland's there. Disney World is there. Right?
Too many bugs.
All right. Well,
I don't like bugs.
You don't like bugs. But you do like cicada shells.
Kind of.
Okay. Well, I do think you should consider writing a rap song one day. Do you know that I did?
No, I don't think you ever done it.
You don't think I ever did?
No.
Well, listen to this.
You know, when I started doing a podcast, I thought I found my calling. But there's something more. There's a little something more I think I can reach into. I got a little more in me. I need to get it out. Just like the podcast. It's Getting It Out rap song from the Getting It Out podcast. And it feels powerful. I think you feel it too. I think you feel it too. But there's certain things that need to be said. Because I was thinking about it a lot lately. What exactly was I thinking about? We'll have to break it down here. Just a little bit for you. I was sitting at home trying to relax when I realized a podcast needs a rap. It sound way better with Nate Dogg back, but I gotta spit quick on these Amish cats. Well, big hoes of shit on Rumble strips. Zeb sits back with 100 kids, but I know how shallow that gene pool is. So what did he do with his cripple kin? How do you tell the time at night when the sun don't shine on the dial bright? While Von Scott lives the hard rock life, singing on the streets underneath the lights. I got grocery lists of shit I don't like. Gonna run them by old Mike on ice and like cops stab a day with the butt drug tips. This podcast will flip your lids. So that's what I sing about on the song for the podcast. It's Getting It Out. How
have you been? How have you been in the last year or so? Since let's go like this. Since January of 2020, what's up?
What have you heard exactly?
Well, I know you got diagnosed with cancer, right? And then we all lived through COVID. So those are the things that I know that's happened to you since then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I knew that I had cancer, but I didn't announce it to the world until my friend put up that GoFundMe, and then that's kind of like how it came out. So,
right.
It wasn't anything like I was trying to have everybody know all my business stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we toured for a month, came home, and then I had my surgery. We played a show, like a benefit show, and then I had my surgery, and then. My second surgery, I should say. And then I think not even on my second treatment, I think. First or second treatment was when they started talking about COVID and how everything was going to start shutting down. And a bunch of tours got canceled soon after. And, you know, so we were supposed to go to the West Coast with Zayo. And that got canceled. I thought I was going to have to cancel it because cancer stuff. And then it ended up having to be canceled because of COVID stuff. So basically there was no better time to get cancer and go through treatment. As shitty as it sounds, there's no better time to do it than when COVID was happening.
Right, because you can't do anything else anyway. Yeah.
Exactly. So Everybody was like, you know, isolated. I was a little more isolated, kind of, I would say. So that's kind of, you know, I started working again at the end of last year. And I said, like, when I was in treatment, I was like, yeah, man, I'm not trying to work, like, fucking, you know, like an asshole like I was, like, 5 days a week, 6 days a week. So while I was in treatment, I was working like 2 days a week on the weeks that I didn't have treatment. Mm-hmm. The weeks that I did have treatment, I didn't work at all because there was no chance that was happening.
Yeah.
So I was working like 2 days a week for like the last, you know, however long. And then I picked up a doctor I worked with, opened up her own practice. So I started working with her like 2 days a week. And now it's like 3 days a week, and sometimes I'm working an extra. So now I'm back to being an asshole, working all goddamn week.
Hey,
like an idiot.
Even if it's 4 days a week, though, that's a pretty good deal. Just to get rid of one of those days. That's it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I go out of town a lot and whatnot, so I mean, it ends up evening out anyway. So
right. What do you do that you can work two days a fucking week?
I'm a vet tech.
Oh, okay. All right.
So yeah, well, I was doing reception. At a veterinary clinic, but typically I'm a vet tech, animal nurse person. Not like I make crazy good money or anything, but I just have minimal bills and whatnot.
Right.
So
I
don't really, you know, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, and I didn't know that about you, but that goes along with the with you've always been, as far as I know, an animal rights guy. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you would think it would be more prevalent in the industry. But it's not.
Yeah.
I work with one other person that's vegan. He's mostly vegan. He's like a freegan. He's awesome. But if there's like someone brings in cookies or something, he's having some. But he'll never like order anything or like pay money for stuff that's vegan or the stuff that's not vegan.
Yeah.
And you would think it would be like, you know, more of a big deal to people. But I mean, a lot of people see pets not as like, you know, they don't look at them in the same playing field as like an animal that's going to be killed for food,
right.
Which I mean, it's fair. That's not an accident that those things happen. But I mean, when you look in the eyes of a fucking pig and you look in the eyes of a dog, they're the same eyes. You know what I mean? So, yeah,
gotcha.
It's you know, what's up?
No, I said I got you. I understand.
Yeah.
So you. I mean, we might have gone over this before already too. Vegan for. Like most of the majority of your life at this point, I'd imagine, right?
No, I think I went vegetarian when I was like 19, and then I think I went vegan when I was 22 or 23, maybe 22, and so that was 18 years ago now.
That's pretty close, though. That's a pretty
I mean, almost half my life for sure.
Yeah, and it's been something from my perspective that, well, at least the vegetarianism and the veganism, the straight edge stuff that you were saying years ago when I was a kid. I don't know how much of that is pertinent, I don't know how much people hold on to that or keep doing it. I don't know where you're at with any of that. Don't need to know, but it's interesting to see. Well, it's cool. It's cool, even somebody who isn't any of those things, to see people that stick to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I can understand like people not wanting to be straight edge anymore because like. I'm sure weed's tight. Like I don't fuck with it. I did have a break glass in case emergency type weed chocolate thing that I had in my freezer just in case my treatment went completely wrong.
Yeah.
And but I never used it. I felt real weird about it. But yeah, I never had to. But I mean, I imagine like people trying to do like LSD or mushrooms, like fucking sick, dude. Like go live your life, man. Do that shit. Who cares? But like, you know, I've never done it. I still don't. I'm just like that old asshole that's just stuck in his ways. And you know, I can't like start smoking weed as a fucking 40-year-old. You know what I mean? Like that's weird. Like I would have had to start like at least 15 years ago for it to make sense. But yeah, I mean, as far as veganism goes, it's not necessarily like, I don't think that's something you grow out of.
Yeah.
It's just something, I think it's easier to get away from if your intentions aren't pure. I feel like it's easier to get away from it if you're not surrounded by like-minded people. And, you know, people grow up and they, you know, move away from those type, you know, subcultures of things. And oftentimes it comes down to something like that. And, you know, they become like a real person again, back into the world, like a free-range human, just eating whatever and having, you know, barbers as friends and lawyers as friends and, you know, all walks of life that don't necessarily subscribe to you know, a vegan lifestyle or animal friendly lifestyle per se. But I mean, it's at this point, 2021 now, it's like the easiest thing in the world to do.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy. They just keep coming out with all these new products. When I was like a little kid and like trying vegetarian and vegan and stuff, there was like nothing. There was like two options. And I almost missed that because I weighed way less than I do now. And I didn't have a bunch of options to choose from, so it didn't take long to order anything. Now it's like I'm going to a vegan restaurant or a place that has like a vegan menu. I'm just like, all right, man, this is a whole situation. Like now I got to ask a million questions, which one's better? And just like this whole argument with myself about what I want to get. You know, so in ways it was much easier when there weren't that many options. But I mean,
but
you
know, good problem to have, I suppose, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now it's like they got all kinds of crazy treats. They got chickens, all kinds of just like new wild shit. Like there's like a vegan bakery or a place that has vegan options in definitely in every major city, in like podunk towns as well. So it's definitely a great problem to have. For
well,
sure.
Now that you're mentioning the vegan bakery, I feel like the one thing that we talked about, cause I'm in Pennsylvania, is that you talked about vegan treats in, I don't know, where is that? Allentown, something like that, around there maybe. I don't know.
Bethlehem.
I've never been. Bethlehem. All right. It's close enough.
Yeah. I think Jesus opened it up or something. Yeah.
Well, so before, and you, we do not have to go down this road at all or any further, but just out of curiosity, was it a, for someone who's been straight edge vegan, for vegetarian, whatever, for so long, was it like a shock to you that you ended up with cancer?
I want to say it was.
I mean, it would be a shock to anybody, right? But because of those, like you know, those choices you made.
I mean, the kind of cancer that I had was very much like a freak occurrence. Like it's one of the most rare cancers, I guess. Like 0.01% of like a million people get it.
Wow.
From what I understand, I don't know if that's, you know, if I'm still quoting that correctly, but it's super rare, and it's not from anything diet-related. It's not from anything gene-related, because I took some gene tests and came back, and it was like, yeah, no, that says nothing. So it's just like a freak occurrence, and I just, you know, was happened to be the lucky one to get it. So
it's got to be
I spent a lot of my adult years, like, avoiding many things. To avoid cancer, and here we go, boom, there it is, right there. And it's you know, it's definitely a weird, tricky road to navigate, like, because I never had like surgeries before, I've never been in the house, I've never been admitted to a hospital before, and all this just kind of like came crashing down to the umpteenth degree. So I'm having, you know, my first surgery was like absolutely insane, and I guess they pump air into you during surgery in order to like open you up without having to like open you up, and all that like air and the gas stays in there, so anytime you breathe after surgery it's an unreal pain and just like hurts to breathe, and the deeper the breath the more it hurts. And you know, dick catheters and stuff, I'm sure, you know,
sounds
people
good.
Listening to this eventually will know what that's like, and it is awful. I screamed at the nurse for sure, because I was like, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much have you heard this hurts? And she was like, oh, like a 4. And I was like, all right, let's find out. And she stuck this thing in there, and I cursed at her or something. And then she pulled it out, and I was like, I'm sorry for cursing at you and yelling at you, but just a heads up, when anybody asks what, on a scale from 1 to 10 how much that hurts, you fucking tell them a 10, because that was terrible. I had to deal with that, and then I had the second surgery, and that one wasn't as bad as the first. Coming out of the surgery after the first one, I like couldn't walk really for like 5 fucking days. I was walking like a super geriatric 100,000 year old man on his deathbed, just because everything fucking hurt. Second surgery wasn't nearly as bad. There was a bigger cut, so I have like gnarly scars on my belly and stuff, and I look like I have 2 fucking belly buttons, but aside from that, I mean, you know, once the cancer thing happens, at that point surgeries don't fucking matter, and you're like, oh shit, I have cancer, great, I still have cancer, and now I have to do this chemotherapy treatment, solid. And like, I've had, you know, my mom had cancer, breast cancer, my aunt had cancer and she died when I was a child, so I've seen like what it does to people, and that's like the scariest shit. But nothing really prepares you for what actually happens. You can see it all you want. You can hear all the things, the side effects that they tell you, the doctors and whatnot. But you're never truly prepared for what happens until you go through it. And it's a hell unlike anything I've ever experienced. It's a fucking crazy thing.
Well, I'm sorry you had to go through it. Are you on the other side of it at this point? I think I saw
that's what
that
they tell me.
Yeah, I think I saw.
Yeah, that's what they tell me. I have to go for scans. Like, I have to go for blood work and scans like every 3 months. I think the scans are now every 6 months. I had to have another colonoscopy. Just like maybe 2 months ago, that came back clear again. Yeah, it's crazy because like all my blood work that comes back, all my scans come back super clear. But even like when I had cancer, my blood work still came back great. When I was on chemo, all my blood work came back great, and your immune system's supposed to be super compromised. Mm-hmm. And the doctor was like, "Yeah, you are like the healthiest person with cancer I've ever seen." And I was like, "I'll take it, I guess. That's weird, but cool." I have scans next month, and get to do it all again. And CT scans are pretty awful. I have like weird PTSD when it comes to like getting IV catheters and stuff because they like push saline in the line, and even though it's going in your veins, you can taste it somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've had this before?
No. I'm just.
Oh. Yeah. Oh yeah. Because they push the saline in the line, and you taste it, and I have to bring like ginger candies with me to like mask as much as possible the taste. Because it just reminds me of being in the fucking hospital. And it was like such a traumatic experience that like it makes me so nauseous to even like taste it for a half a split second. This is my life for the next few years until I think 5 years is the cutoff, but the doctor technically said I was in remission. So,
well, hey, that's great to come. I mean, yeah. For a year and a half or whatever it's been that I've known about, at least that seems like a pretty, yeah. Pretty quick turnaround, and hopefully it stays that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. It's I mean, obviously I'm not too fucking thrilled about it.
Of course,
but I mean, it's the best case scenario with the cards I've been dealt. You know what I mean? So
yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, let's. I don't want you to have to fucking go through or talk about all that again. So let's go on to what we're supposed to be talking about. Because the last time I talked to you, we were talking about everything is temporary except suffering, and that was. That was a full length that came. Was that Sensory Media, right? And,
correct.
And that had just come out. What was the release on that? That was January 10th, 2020. So yeah. So
yeah.
Right around then. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised. I was a little bit surprised, knowing what you had going on in your personal life, knowing that we all just went through this or are still going through this bullshit that we're going through. That when this language is the instrument of the empire dropped, I was like, where the fuck did this come from? I wasn't expecting this. Was that the idea?
Kind of. So we recorded it a few years ago. 2017 was when we originally recorded it. We had to change some things around on the recording. Some mistakes had to get fixed. So we were under contract with Central Media, and we were putting it up for... you know, pre-order and stuff, and then we got signed, and then they were like, yeah, no, you can't put this out. It was just like, sweet. So we shelved it until we were able to release it, and as soon as we were able to release it, we sent it to the plant, finalized the layout, got everything situated. So because there were those mistakes on the record, we wanted to, drop it as a surprise without really promoting it before it came out. It's been crazy because we're not a big band by any stretch, but since then this EP has just come out, and it's an EP, so it's kind of like, I mean, some people prefer EPs, some people prefer full length.
Yeah,
I prefer full length.
I do too,
personally.
Yeah.
But the reception on this EP has been like insane, like surprisingly, like people that I'm friends with that never ever ever mentioned my band before. Are like, oh, this is really something, like, you know, and it just got a lot of praise for something that's half old, and it's an EP, and it's definitely, you know, left of center for sure, but it's awesome. Like, I couldn't be happier with how, you know, people are taking it, because it is, nothing we ever release is like an easy pill to swallow. And we're totally fine with that. We totally understand it.
Right.
And this is no exception, obviously. Every song is like 7.5 minutes, 8 minutes. The first song, super light. The second song is like light and super heavy. And the last song is just balls out heavy. We try to make it a pretty fluid record. And I think we did an okay job. The songs are always, because we listen back to them ever since they were recorded. And there's something just hits different about them, to us at least. Mm-hmm. And I guess it resonates with other people too. So, it's come out pretty well. And we couldn't be bummed, any bummed about it. It's pretty solid.
They definitely feel like, at least when I first started listening to it, without any knowledge of it being like an older recording, like when I'm listening to With a Certain Sorrow in Our Eyes, like when I'm first listening, it's like this. It feels way, way sadder than the other shit. And like you said, it's a little lighter too. Not that anything you've done so far has been happy-go-lucky. You know what I mean? But there was just a more morose kind of vibe with it. And like you said, it's a little lighter. But then as the EP progresses, it gets significantly heavier. This whole thing, I don't know. Like it's not. So I guess I was still thinking you. Ether Coven was a Century Media band, but that stopped. When did that stop?
I want to say maybe 6 months ago. I think about 6 months ago.
So it was just a one and done thing. Decided.
Yeah, yeah.
Still pretty fucking cool, but now I see.
Yeah, I'm
not
mad about it.
Now I see that this is, and at first I thought this was self-released, and then I saw there's a label behind it, but then I figured out that is this label you, Horned and Blind?
Yes. So it's just kind of like, we put the tape version of Everything is Temporary out, and we put this out. In a perfect world, and bands can start touring again full-time and whatnot, I would love to start putting out bands that are on brand with, anything relatively similar to us. Right. Through this label / faux label, just because I have a lot of friends that are in insane bands that don't get the recognition that they deserve, and they do, they tour often enough, maybe not full time, but just a lot of bands that do real cool stuff and play insane shit that just they don't get the recognition they deserve. we did it ourselves. And which was what we were doing the first time around when we had it up for pre-order. Everything was ourselves. Our next record will be on a label. We actually just finished writing it, and we go to Chicago at the end of October to record. So
nice.
And it's going to be probably 10 songs, maybe 11 songs, but as of right now, it's looking like 10. Once everything's ready to go and the pre-orders are about to go up and the video's up or something, then everything gets announced and whatnot. But until then, pretty amped to be a small fish in a medium-sized pond. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
In stark contrast to what we have previously been. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned that these songs in this EP, I guess, in its entirety was done a while ago. And that there were some mistakes on it. Did you fix these mistakes? Did you say that? Did you fix them, or are they in there? Because if they're in there, I don't hear anything.
Oh no, the mistakes have been fixed and changed. And
were they bad enough that totally somebody good that's not familiar with the songs would have actually noticed them?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure how to answer that. So taking the diplomatic approach, I just have to say that they're two big mistakes that have been fixed. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I got you. I like that. not mistakes as big as that, but I used to always joke with guys I was in a band with before about when we would fuck up. Like, who gives a shit? Nobody knows. Nobody knows our fucking songs. Nobody's ever heard these things before.
That too.
These three tracks sounded like a finished product, as obviously they are now. Did you go back and re-record the whole thing in its entirety, or is this
no
pieces?
And actually, a couple things got because there was so much time, and the engineer that we went through the first time, was also the engineer that we re-recorded some of the stuff with the second time. But in that time, a few things got lost in the shuffle because he moved locations and moved studios and moved computers and stuff. So actually, Brian Hillhouse was actually supposed to be on like the opening vocal on the whole thing, and something happened and it was gone. So unfortunately, we weren't able to get back that back, and we didn't even notice it until it was too late. And I had the test press in my possession. And it was just like, fuck, what are we going to do here? So that sucks. That's an absolute deep regret. And if I realized that, I would have had him redo it or whatever. A couple other vocal things were missing. But I mean, overall, it's, you know, it's almost exactly as it was supposed to be. But yeah, we re-recorded some parts earlier this year, I think in March maybe. But all the guitars and all of my vocals are exactly the same. All the bass is the same. And yeah, so everything else was changed.
Nice. Well, you mentioned Brian Hillhouse, whose name I know from Seraphim. And they had that awesome record, The Light in the Distance, on A389 Records.
Yeah, that record is a fucking... Yeah, that thing. It's insane how great that band was. And
that record's sitting in front of me. I just pulled it off the shelf in front of me. It's literally right in front of where I sit. Yeah,
that's awesome. The drummer for that band is one of my best friends, and we're super close with Brian Hillhouse, obviously. Funny story. I don't mean to get off topic here.
No, please do.
And not to get super dark here, but I actually asked Brian Hillhouse if anything happened to me, you know, cancer-wise.
Yeah.
And if I died super early, to finish whatever songs we had and with my band and do them and have him sing and, you know, add whatever he, you know, collab and whatnot. So if I died, Brian Hillhouse would have been the singer of Ether, essentially.
Well, that's quite a lot of trust. That's not the word I'm looking for, but that's quite an honor to tell somebody, take my place.
Yeah. And,
you know,
that's the only person I can think of that I would want to do it, really, because I feel like we have like similar visions, and he's like a crazy creative genius. And I don't know if you've heard his work with The Animals Comfort.
I have not.
You know, there's like two EPs up.
I really loved the Seraphim stuff. There was the 7-inch. Well, I was a big A389 guy too. Like everything, I was like real close to that label. Yeah. Literally lived in the house of the label. But anyway, so
awesome.
I loved the 7-inch, and then the Light in the Distance, of course. But they lost me with the Seraph, the light thing. It was too much for me at the time. It was probably a little too goonish. It was, you know, late 20s, couldn't handle it. It was too much for me. It got a little too arty for me. I don't even remember what it sounded like. I just remember the concept was too much for me to handle. I couldn't handle it. So I got to jump in for the Animals Comfort.
Yeah, Animal Comfort is fucking wonderful. I think Seraph the Light, I don't think Brian Hillhouse sang anymore. I'm not sure too much logistics on that. But I know when they did the collaboration with Axis, that was a crusher, because that was very much truer to Seraphim than what they did after that. And that thing was fucking crazy. And you know, if Axis is part of it, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But that collaboration was like a total crusher. But yeah, the Light in the Distance, like, I listened to that record so many times, I can't even tell you. Actually, one of our first shows was with them in a record store called Radioactive in Fort Lauderdale, down here. And I think, well, we had a standalone singer at the time, and I think he couldn't make it for some reason, so we just played instrumental. But so Seraphim played that show. It was awesome. And I've known Warren, the drummer, since like, I don't even know, maybe 2004. From like shows in Memphis, and he used to be in a band called Choices Made, a hardcore band that was like a posy Christian band.
Sounds like a Face Down band or something.
Yeah. I met Brian Hillhouse in passing, I think, a few times back then, and then we kind of like reconnected when Seraphim was a thing. Just like insane musicians. Those songs are ridiculous. The song with the banjo, get out of here. So silly. So good.
So were these these collaborations, because you mentioned, well, I know there's a couple, Eva Hall and David Paul. I don't know if you mentioned them, but I know that they're, mm-hmm. they had a hand in this. Were these collaborations that you like, were more, sorry, I'm burping. That's the only reason.
Go for it.
Were they like something you anticipated getting involved, like you wanted to work with these people, so you were writing something to work with them for, or this, or you just had these songs and it's like, oh, this would be great with them, why don't I reach out to them? How did these link up?
Truth be told, we had no intention of recording those songs at that time at all. Our buddy Iceman, who recorded the EP, and he recorded
Chuck Liddell,
our second record. What's up,
Chuck Liddell?
No,
I'm kidding. I don't actually.
Iceman recorded. Oh,
fuck's sake!
But he was like closing up shop and moving out of town, I think we were like, oh fuck it, let's be the last recording you have at the place. And so we were like, fuck it, let's just finish these songs up, go record them, and we'll be the last thing out of Iceman Studios in South Florida. And then we did. I finished the vocals weren't even done, so I finished them way later. And then I was like, okay, well, let's just have a bunch of vegans on the record because that'll be sick. Brian Hillhouse is obviously, a great person to have in your corner. So we're like, great. Brian Hillhouse, solid. Let's get it. I've known Eva Hall for, a million years when Bishop played the West Coast with Gather. And we did like 5 or 6 shows together or something. And we've stayed in touch over the years. And she's just somebody that I really appreciate. And look up to as far as like animal rights community goes, and just being in a hardcore band and being a woman in the hardcore scene, especially at a time when that was kind of frowned upon,
right?
In the mid 2000s. And a funny tour story, just some wild stuff that happened back then. Not going to tell it, but it was definitely, we seen some weird stuff back then on that tour together. But yeah, Eva is just a great fucking person. Super cool. Gather, obviously, amazing band. David Paul, who is one of the other guitar players in Remembering Never Now, he used to play in a band called Feral Lux. He now does a band called El Jesus, and it's a band that sounds like Failure. I don't know why I'm forgetting their name. He is just one of the most talented people that I know, and he just has the best ideas vocally and guitar work and stuff, and he's just super creative. So he helped out with some stuff on the EP, and he helped out with some stuff on the full length before that, or There's Nothing Left For Me Here, couple things here and there, and he's probably going to help out with some vocal stuff on the next record, just because he's like another great person, just having your corner. Hey, what do you think I can do for this? How can I expand this? How can I do this better? Just super creative, super cool dude. And I'm very lucky that all these people decided, let me contribute to this thing with these fucking jabronis.
Did they all happen like now? Were they part of the new recording process?
No.
They're part of the
original. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all this stuff that was tracked is years old.
Right, right. So do you feel like this would have come out the way it did if the pandemic didn't happen?
Yeah, I think it was coming out regardless.
Right.
Yeah, it was absolutely coming out regardless. It would have been better if the pandemic never happened, obviously, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But we would have been able to play shows much sooner, and we probably would have gotten it done faster, realistically speaking. It was a tough time though, like getting everything back in order. Cause I got from the treatment, I had neuropathy. And, so my hands stopped working properly, for quite some time. So I couldn't, I lost maybe 90% of the feeling in my hands, probably on my 6th treatment. And that lasted up until maybe 3 or 4 months ago. Now I have like most of the feeling back in my hand. It's still not 100%, but. So getting back to playing songs that are a little more intricate, a little more involved, was definitely a chore, and I had to like relearn how to play guitar with a handicap. It was pretty fucking terrible.
I'd imagine. Like that's what, like you say stuff like that, and I just kind of sit here like, I don't even know how to, how to respond to that. I don't know, because I can't imagine what that's like. You know where my thoughts immediately went, and this is how fucking stupid I am and how I can't take anything seriously. I just started thinking about shoes and having to wear Velcro shoes again or something, or like slip-ons.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, oh, shit. Listen, I don't remember the last time I tied a shoe.
Well, now you got an excuse,
all right? Getting a brand new pair of shoes. Yeah, I just leave them however they're going to lay is how they're going to be on my feet. I don't care. I don't got time to tie fucking shoes. You know what I'm saying? But yes, I get what you're saying. Yeah. But trying to put on a button up shirt, cause like the, when I was reception on, outside of treatment weeks,
yeah.
Trying to put on a button up shirt is fucking almost impossible because you can't feel the buttons or the holes. And, it was really fucking dumb. I would show up to practice, and I would, like, gas out super early.
Yeah.
Just moving my equipment, I would just gas out. And then, like, we would be playing these songs, and it just sounded like I was a child trying to figure out a guitar for the first time. And I'm just, like, looking at my band so, like, just, like, pathetically, like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what to say here. Like, this is a thing. So I got to relearn how to play all these songs again. So I'm sorry this sounds like this, but hopefully it'll be better sometime. And, eventually, I've been taking these vitamins and stuff that encourage some healing of the nerves or some shit. I'm not sure. But I've been doing that, and it's been working pretty well, I guess, because,
Because it's working. Right.
Yeah, I got a lot of the feeling back, but there was a span of, like, somewhere between August and March, where it was looking pretty fucking grim.
That's a big span of time.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time to get discouraged, I'd imagine.
Yeah. And that's where I broke the bulk of the record, is in that time for the most part.
Jesus. Well, with the EP, the language is the instrument of the empire. What does that mean? Where does that come from? And is there any significance to the title with what's on the cover?
Yes, actually. The whole layout is pretty topical to the topic, essentially. But one of my last semesters in college, I had like a Latin American history class, and that was a phrase used by the Spanish when they were trying to overtake Latin American countries, Latin American countries. So basically, the idea was the best way to rule a people was through language. And then I kind of, you got to wrap your head around that in some form or fashion. And then you realize, oh, well, we do that today still, very much so, with everything that's normalized around us. So we are indoctrinated into all of our norms. I think we might have talked about this before. Just everything, all the parts of our lives are kind of just laid out for us and planned and plotted. And this is what's going to happen. This is normal. This is cool. This is chill. So with that for the cover, obviously it's the nuclear family, which is a very normalized idea in any type of DVA. I mean, now obviously it's a little different, but that was the quintessential best case scenario model for the American family for, decades and decades and decades. Clearly she ain't like that no more, and it hasn't been, yeah. And it wasn't even then, but just broken families or families with different colored people or same-sex people or whatever have always been frowned upon because we have this language that says, okay, well, this is normal, so everything that's not this is abnormal. Everything is not this, we can treat differently. Anything that's not this, we can treat lesser than us. Inside the layout, there's some American propaganda ads and stuff just about how great America is and how great it is to be an American and this and that. And the lyrics very much, it's a lot about normalization of things that should not fucking be normal and normalized. The first song is political as it is personal for the most part.
Yeah.
And it can be on two different fields. It's just kind of like that line that's pushed to what you're going to be good with or what someone's going to put you through, essentially, and how far you're going to go and how far you're going to acquiesce to someone else's demands or someone else's standards. And that works in a in a romantic relationship, and that works in the just socio-political field, where the boundaries just keep getting pushed, and that's something that we've been, we've been fighting so much for equality for so long, different groups, I should say, and there really hasn't been much change. It's incremental, the smallest incremental change, and it's like we've been struggling so long with all these problems, and not much has changed since the 60s or since the 50s. So second song is about veganism and normalizing the idea of relying on animals for food and, the suffering they go through. And we're just like totally fine with it. It's chill. You know what I mean? Like, as long as it's not me or it's not my dog, I don't care what happens to other animals. And the third song is just basically a critique on the line that we're okay with when it comes to, how do I say this? I'm trying to find the best, the most descriptive way to do it. Just basically about the big American lie that we're just normalized all these weird parts of culture that are very much against our own interests. Bootleg culture, all the fucking Blue Lives Matter bullshit, the prison system, and, all these different weird aspects of our lives that we're faced with every single day. And we've just normalized the idea that, cops do a good job and they're just here to protect us. Or that, eating fast food 10 times a day, that shit's fine. Whatever it is. And people are just like, yeah, no, this is fine. This is the way it's always been. So this is how we're going to keep running it. And it's like, maybe you should bring that back to the drawing board, dog. Just cool out a little bit. Think about it. Learn about it. Don't spout off about shit you don't understand, which is a big thing that people don't take into consideration. Not to jump off complete topic, but, ever since Donald Trump was up, it's like embarrassing how much people are off a little bit. Ever since this dumb fuck was the president, everything is so sensationalized and people feel so emboldened and people feel that they can talk about things that they have no authority talking on. And they do it with such conviction, even though they're wrong and fucking dumb. It's so fucking weird.
It is.
Like, people talk about.
I've been policing myself with this a lot more. All right. Not necessarily political, social, like anything that matters. Just in normal fucking conversations in my house with my family, usually with my wife, where she'll, like today, she went to the doctor. She's got a little cold thing going on, and they prescribed her some medicine. And I was like, yeah, well, that does the same thing that the NyQuil was doing. Do you know how much I know that? I don't fucking have any idea. I have no clue. I just say it. like what the fuck? Yeah. And like, I catch myself like, what? Don't listen to me. I don't know how that becomes default. And I've talked about this before with other people where I'll say, like, somebody will say something about the weather and I'll be like, no, it's not going to rain tomorrow. I don't think so. And like, based on what? I didn't even look. Like, I'm just, it's just like this. I know.
I think it's a little different. That kind of situation, I think you might be looking for like an answer to a problem or a side avenue.
No. What I'm going off of is me coming up with, oh, I know, because I've got the tiniest bit of information, and so now I'm confident enough to tell you that you're wrong and I'm right based on a headline. On somebody said it. I heard somebody say it, so that's the way it is. And like I said, it's just on a smaller scale. It's just something that I myself have seen. But the thing that I found interesting about and I'm sorry, I totally cut you off on this thing. But when I was listening to Boot Poisoning, just catching, because I don't have the lyrics for this, so just catching what I can catch. And fortunately, listen to heavy music for long enough, it's pretty easy. But what I did catch, and I'm thinking like, oh, okay, this for songs that I think were recorded a few years ago, they sound pretty relevant to now. And I think that is ridiculous that I think that, like, because it's just because, like, it's about, like, I don't know how I can make this make sense, because you and I both know, coming up being part of the hardcore scene for years, is there's always been songs about not being about, you know, like anti-police, anti-racism, you know, anti, like the shit's always existed, but now it's just more, now it's just more popular, I guess. It's just more part of the mainstream culture to be anti this, that, and the other thing. And I don't know.
It's, I mean, it's always been fuck the police since day one. When I was a child, and like, it, you know, it feels weird to say that because one of my cousins that I'm fucking really close with is a cop, and we didn't talk, we didn't speak for a year and change because he didn't want to, he didn't want to listen to my anti-cop rhetoric, and that's fair. I mean, I, you know,
he why said, would he? You know, you know? He,
yeah, and that's very fair. I wouldn't expect him, you know, to follow me on social media while I'm saying, you know, fuck this and fuck that. I get it, and that's fine. And I said, listen, my man, like, I love you to death. I, that doesn't mean I have to love or like or respect your job, and that's fine. I was like, no matter what, whenever you want to talk again, that's fine. Look, we can do it. I love you. Don't forget that. And, you know, we didn't talk for like a year and change, and then one day it was cool, and he came, and we don't talk about it. You know, it's definitely weird because even like the first time I hung out with him one-on-one, it was kind of strange just because I don't, I mean, I, he's my cousin. Obviously, I know he's not going to try and do any slick shit. But I've never felt easy or I've never felt safe with cops. My run-ins when I was a child, when I was doing nothing wrong, were never positive. One time this fucking cop abducted me when I was like 12 and like put my bike in the back of his car and then drove me somewhere. Somewhere else in South Florida, and then dropped me off somewhere else that I, in a strange place, I had no idea where I was, and then said it was because I fit the description of someone that pushed someone in front of a train. It's like, are you fucking joking? Wow. Dude, I'm fucking 12 years old. What, like, what do you think this is? And like, we used to have to walk to shows all the time when we were little kids because we didn't have a car. So one time we walked to a show and we got fucked with by cops three times, one of which tried to say, oh, you fit the description of someone that just robbed a house. It's like, dog, are you fucking joking? Do you see us carrying around TVs or silverware or whatever people steal out of someone's house? Like, the fuck out of here. So, yeah, I mean, now it's like a popular thing to be anti-cop, but it's like, I mean, it doesn't take the dumbest person in the world to understand that, you know, cops are there for a job. They're there to protect capitalism, and that's just what it is. And they do that, whether someone wants to agree that they're killing people or policing one type of people more than another, whether they want to say that they're doing their job or not, they're absolutely doing the job that they're meant to do, which is protect capitalism and the whole, you know, the system as we know it, to keep the maintain the status quo. That's it. That's their job. They don't solve crimes per se. Once, yeah, it's possible, but they don't prevent crimes because they come in after the crime's already been committed. So, you know, the person said, what good did this cop do? Like, not much. And you know, people should be bringing it back to the drawing board and having an understanding of why are crimes being committed? Oh, because people are fucking poor. Why are people poor? Because of fucking capitalism. Because the capitalism that we know it destroys lives and mental health, you know, dependency on a partner, which is why a lot of women stay in really shitty relationships, because they don't get paid as much as men. They get treated like shit at jobs. So, you know, nothing is on accident here. And all this stuff, again, is normalized in our life. And we don't question these things because it's so normal. It's been going on. That's the way it's always been. And we just let it ride. And that's where, like, nationalism comes in and patriotism, and people are really fucking amped on America. It's like, that's great. What are you amped on? And then you got to break people down a few pegs and, you know, tell them, like, hey, okay, well, I get it. That's cute. That idea is really great. However, oftentimes they say, well, if you don't like it here, go somewhere else. It's like, bitch, you never left the Tri-County area. Shut the fuck up. And, you know, it's really disheartening to see so many people that are really all guns blazing, pro-American, don't think about anything, super anti-communism, anti-Marxism, whatever that means. And it's like, dog, did you even read the manifesto? Because if not, don't open your mouth about it. Like, it's fine that you have this idea of what this is. Don't talk about it if you don't know anything about it aside from what you heard from any propaganda news stations, or your stupid fucking uncle telling you some dumb shit. Like, I get it. Like, it's the real big scary monster in the room, and we're all supposed to hate it. But the only reason it's been, you know, the propaganda's been so strong against it is because it is a direct threat to capitalism. And if, you know, people maintained the wages of their own work, then capitalism would cease to exist as we know it. So that's why, you know, in the 50s, there was like the big witch hunt for all the communists and stuff. And, you know, that's because they were like, oh, shit, if we don't put a stop to this now, we might lose our spots. And yeah, so I just went way far on that one. So sorry.
No, it's good because it explains like the one it to me that explains how all these things, even though it's like, even though there's only three songs on this EP, it feels big. But it's all centralized around one idea, like you said, yeah. Normalization. But there's a few different, maybe not perspectives, but a few different issues that it touches on, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's interesting. And like you said, the songs are all long. They're, it's like 25 minutes long just for three songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's cool. That's what I expect from you guys at this point. The EP's been available digitally now for what, a couple weeks, maybe 2 weeks or something, right?
I think 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks.
And you said response has been good, and you're expecting to do a physical release, right?
Yeah, we got the test presses approved like months ago. Just got back from the plant. It's looking like physical records will be here in December.
That's not bad for the way it's been going. I know some people that have been waiting a year for to get their records pressed stuff.
They originally said it was supposed to be in our hands this month. But I figured, okay, well, probably early September.
Yeah, well, you know what, December, Pete? I bought a couch 27 weeks ago. Do you know that I'm staring at a room with no couch in it right now? 27 fucking weeks. Well, we're not quite at 27. We're at like week 25 right now. So I'm really anticipating week 27.
When you say weeks, it makes us sound less than months.
Yeah, six months and 1 week, I think is what it is. That's
I would say do the month thing. Be like, oh, it's been over 6 months. Or be like, it's been over half a year and I'm still waiting. I think the year over the several weeks is like, all right, man, if you're waiting almost a year for a couch, like, fuck that.
That's crazy,
you know.
But it's got the right dimensions. So Pete, you do what you can when you gotta.
Yeah, I mean, do what you need when to do. You gotta fit some things places. You gotta make sure you get what you need, and you know, by golly, you're gonna wait six years for whatever you need.
That's
you
right. We got it all measured out. All the rest of the furniture's here, Pete. And when that couch gets here, it's gonna fit perfectly. My wife said to me the other day, "What if we don't like it?" I'm like, we have to. That's not an option.
You're gonna have to like it.
We like it, no matter
in
what.
In 6 years, when you get that couch, you're gonna love it.
It's gonna be the best fucking.
And it's
couch.
Gonna be brand new, and all the other stuff's gonna be like mad used up. And you're gonna have to replace the rest of it, and that's gonna take another 6 years.
That's all right.
It's gonna be solid when it all comes together. It's gonna be solid.
Until then, well, hey. So the one last thing I wanted to ask you about, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, you posted two videos for House of Strangers and This House is a Tomb of Memories. Mm-hmm. Other than making a comment that you sounds like you're trying to get on HGTV, you also made the comment that you were now that this is the first of three waves of shit, I believe you, from Ether Coven. Yeah. So mm-hmm. Is it safe to assume that this EP is wave two?
Correct.
And I assume we can't say what wave three is, right?
Correct. Well, I already hinted at it.
Yeah, and I think I know what it is because I think you hinted at it online too.
Maybe. Probably. Yeah. So the third thing is just us recording and, you know, the next label and the next phase and this and that. That's just kind of like the next thing. There are some little things that are popping up in the meantime, though, that are really exciting that have to do with the EP. Because once the EP was released, people were like, oh, shit, this is kind of cool. Let me see what I can do with this. So we are having a tape release, which we were only intended for this to be out on 12-inch. That's mm-hmm. it. We were thinking about doing tapes, and we were thinking about doing CDs, but we were just like, you know what? Fuck it. We're just going to do like a one-and-done press and just be done with it and then put it out. It'll be out digitally. It'll be on Bandcamp, whatever. Shade Beast out of Georgia wanted to put a tape out, super limited, like 30 copies or something.
Yeah.
And then they do like a special case that's like a just all black layout. It looks cool as fuck. I haven't seen it in real life yet because our bass player has all the tapes at his house and hasn't brought any to practice. We are, I don't know if it's too early to announce, so I won't say who's putting it out on CD.
But someone is.
Supporters. Yeah. Some supporters of us, of ours, for years and years and years, have, it started out as a blog, I believe, and then started putting out records and stuff based out of the UK and Europe. So they're going to be doing a CD release, and then a tape release also is going to be an official tape release that's a little less limited than what Shade Beast did, and it will follow the layout of the record that's going to be out from a good friend that I've known for years and years and years in California, who has a little label that puts out a lot of cool shit, you know. So that'll all be popping off in a bit, and it'll be announced and whatnot when it's time.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a lot more than what was expected, but it's very cool, especially for just a little big three song release like this to get all that.
Yeah, it's definitely, I understand it's easier to digest, like, you know, a short thing. Three songs for us is, you know, it's short for us. Right. But we're, you know, like I said, we understand that we are absolutely not everyone's cup of tea. We are definitely a difficult pill to swallow because we have like ridiculous long songs, and it's like we try to incorporate like the best of all these weird worlds about, you know, like super artsy nerd stuff also mixed with just absolute knuckle dragging brutality. Yeah. And have like a pretty good contrast of those two things. So I mean, the next record is going to be absolutely no different, only just a little bit faster in a lot of parts. So I'm really looking forward to getting these, you know, on tape and, getting it, out so we can start playing shows with more new songs. Cause, you know, literally for the last record we played, or for the last tour, we had, one record out for 1 month, on this tour, and we only played off that record for 1 month. And now we have a whole new record that's about to come out. pretty fun. But,
well, you know, speaking of that,
that's, and the what's up,
I say, speaking of that, and we can end it on this one. Now that things are what they are right now, whatever the fuck that means exactly, are you playing shows? Is there tours planned? What's the future as far as live shows?
Our first show back is September 10th, and that's going to be at Respectables with a bunch of buds, and then we're playing at the beginning of October at our resident house, the Poor House in Fort Lauderdale. And then the end of the month, we go to Chicago to record. And then we might be doing a weekender with some friends that I can't announce yet because it hasn't been announced. Just like three shows on the East Coast, because I think the band is all from different areas. So they can only kind of get together and do, you know, small things. But let me see what else we have. We're supposed to be going out for a couple weeks for an East Coast run at the beginning of the year. So in that time, hopefully we'll be able to go do our promo stuff for the full length and have that ready. And then, you know, so we'll see what we got going on. But as of right now, we just have a very few shows. And then we're shooting to do something in early 2022.
Wow, that's awesome. And I'm glad, it sounds like you plan to be busy. And that's very cool. I hope it all works out, because we know how shit falls apart now out of nowhere.
One thing, not to fucking toot my own horn or anything, but I didn't realize how wild my work ethic was until I realized until I thought I was going to die. And then I was like, you know what? We got to do things. We just got to go. Because like in the thick of like just ending my treatment, we went up and shot three videos with our friend Karen. In October, it's just like, and just like, that's unreal. And like the whole time I was in treatment, I was just writing as much as I possibly could, because it was like very therapeutic.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's just like, now it's like go time. It's like super go time. And you know, we may not be active because you can't really be an active band per se during a global pandemic. I mean, on the, like, the behind the scenes is just, you know, steady work and just doing, you know, everything that I possibly can. And, you know, we've been kind of putting everything together, you know, for the EP and then for the full length coming out. Yeah, it's pretty wild. I think in my old age and, you know, dealing with the possibility of dying, you look at things totally different and you realize, oh shit, like, if I don't do this now, it may never get done, you know, because death. And, so fuck it. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's get up, pick off all this shit and throw it somewhere and see what happens. And that's kind of where we're at now, you know?
Side of the blood and the pain.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Peter Kowalski of Ether Coven. Pleasure to talk to him again. The song you just heard was The Bolt or the Blade from their new EP. Language is the Instrument of the Empire, available everywhere right now. You can go order the physical copies, and you can just listen to the digital shit wherever you listen to digital shit. I want to thank everybody who checked out last week's episode. That was one of the best performing episodes I've had in a while, and it was for a good cause. And subsequently, the GoFundMe page that has now raised, I think as of Sunday night on August 22nd, it is up to $28,000, which is the original goal was $25,000. So they moved the goalpost to $40,000 to get things, to get more things done, to fund more of it. And it's a great idea. I've been talking to MC behind the scenes here, getting some input on what they are planning to do and how he's planning to do it. And it all starts with needing money. So if you can go to that GoFundMe Skid Row Garage fundraiser page and donate a couple bucks, I'm sure that would help. Okay, but that's it for this one. You can always go follow the podcast at getting_it_out_podcast on Instagram and facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast. There is also the Twitter at gettingitoutpod where you'll get reposts from the other socials, but that's about it. And yeah, there's a Patreon too, patreon.com/gettingitoutpodcast. I don't feel like trying to sell you on that right now. If you are a Patreon subscriber or want to be, I totally appreciate that. It genuinely is very helpful, and it means a lot to me. Okay, so I'm going to end this one with a song from Gainesville, Florida trio Thunderclap. The song is called Morcus, and it's off of their upcoming 7-inch called Morcus. And it's going to come out in Ashtray Monument, and it's pretty cool. Check it out, and thank you for listening. Bye-bye.